Now, I'm joined by consultant psychologist David Carey, who's here to talk about the connection between our physical appearance and our personality. David, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Marty.
Nice
Happy
to have
to
you here. We're not supposed to judge, of course, on appearances, but if we're honest, most of us would admit that we do.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. In fact, there's some interesting research about job interviews, and whether or not you get the job is often decided in the first minute or two based on the visual input. In other words, how you look, how you stand, your facial expression, how well-groomed are you, things like that. The brain is a very visual organ. Right from birth, in fact, within minutes after birth, a newborn baby held up to its mummy's face will imitate the tongue-thrusting gestures of its mother. In other words, mother will stick out tongue, baby will imitate this gesture. So highly attuned is the visual centers of the brain in the process of forming the attachment, the bond between mother and infant.
So it begins right from the very beginning.
It begins right within the first several minutes.
Now, beauty is only skin deep, but again, the truth is that when dazzled by beauty, the beholder might overlook less attractive facets of someone's personality, wouldn't they?
Well, absolutely. And it's really interesting to know that our view of what beauty is changes, doesn't it? If you think back to the 16th century, and the paintings of Rubens, and we have a word for this, of course, his paintings of the nude female, Rubenesque, full-figured women, voluptuous appearing, sturdy-looking women. That was what was regarded as the epitome of female beauty at the time. And think how that's changed. In the modern age, our image of beauty is presented to us by television actors and actresses and film stars, and models in particular, is of these stick, skinny women, looking like pencils almost, some of them. How things have changed in the Western world in terms of how we view beauty, and in different cultures, their view of male attractiveness and female attractiveness may differ from ours.
What makes the perfect face? Is it the most symmetrical face?
Yeah, there's been a lot of research on that. There's this thing called the golden ratio, the golden triangle, geometrical configuration from the eyes down to the mouth and the chin and whatnot. And when those ratios are quite harmonious, and don't ask me because I can't remember exactly what the ratios are, those faces are deemed to be much more attractive and much more beautiful than other faces. However, having said that, our view of what is a beautiful and handsome and or pretty face is very much colored by our culture and how we're reared and what we're exposed to. So today, of course, we're bombarded with images of voluptuous women and voluptuous figures and very handsome men with the stereotypical six-pack. All our calendars, for example, these firefighters and whatnot, they're all the alleged epitome of what male handsomeness and male attractiveness ought to be. And a lot of us don't look exactly like that, you know, so we have to live with a certain amount of potential knock on our self-esteem. In the end, however, in terms of attractiveness and relationships, it really is personality that wins out. Initially, it's physical attractiveness. Often the eyes. What do we say? The eyes are the windows to the soul. So that the brain is always receiving all this tremendous visual input in the back of the brain, the occipital lobe, and it's evaluating it, and it's going deep into the brain to emotional centers. There's a lot of research on why it is we take an instant like or dislike to someone. And current thinking is it's because of what they look like, and our brain remembers and processes that information. Do you look like someone that I've met in my past in some way that has been friendly and kindly towards me? And my brain, without thinking at all, and this happens in milliseconds, is going to process you as a non-threatening individual. If your physical countenance and facial features and bodily postures and whatnot are causing my brain to remember someone who harmed me or threatened me, I'm going to have a stress reaction to you. I want to either run away or just avoid you in one way or another.
So are we then pre-programmed to view certain physical features as beautiful, or is there any cultural basis for what we see?
It's both, actually. Yeah, it's nature and nurture. A lot of it is cultural and socialization, I was talking before about our modern views of what feminine beauty is as opposed to 16th century views. There's an evolutionary purpose to all of this, too. I mean, we like to think of it as psychological, but my evolutionary psychologist colleagues would say this all has to do with genetic endowment, survival, and perpetuation of the species. What we deem as most attractive is really our appraisal of who the ideal mate is, so that we can sire and rear children and perpetuate our species on the planet. So there's an evolutionary purpose behind a lot of this as well.
David, I was doing a piece a couple of months ago with two ladies who were hoping to find a partner. And we'd various experiments and they were doing all the different techniques that you do. And the really interesting thing was on one occasion, my question basically is, are you attracted to somebody of a kind of a similar standard of looks to yourself? You know, I mean, you hear the phrase, you know, punching above his weight or her weight, i.e. the person is better looking than them. But are most people, do they kind of settle with somebody of a similar standard of looks? And the reason I ask is because with these two girls, and there was one of the selection of boys available, there was one drop dead gorgeous six pack kind of guy you'd see in an Abercrombie and Fish kind of advertisement. And none of them would go for him because they said he's actually too good looking. They were kind of intimidated, or it wasn't a self-esteem or confidence issue. It was more he's actually too good looking to be attractive. So when we're going for somebody, are we looking for a similar standard?
Well, I wasn't there, obviously, when you were talking to these women. But this is a common dynamic, actually, that the most beautiful and gorgeous people in secondary school and in university are often the least approached. And there is a certain self-esteem issue knocking around here, and that we look at someone like that, and if we have any self-confidence or self-esteem issues of our own, we might immediately begin to think to ourselves, they'd never like me. I'm not as handsome. I'm not as gorgeous, et cetera, et cetera. What makes lasting relationships? It's not physical attractiveness. Because physical beauty is a very transitory thing and it changes over time. Even in these days of modern cosmetics and Botox and plastic surgery, etc., we're all, of course, chasing youth and beauty. However, we will grow older, each and every one of us. And in the end, it's what's in the inside that matters most, our kindness, our decency, our respect of others, not just beauty. But initially, the brain is always going to respond to the visuals, always.
But David, do we not make judgments about people by having a quick look at their faces, whether they're smiling or they're looking grumpy? Do we not make an immediate
appraisal? Yes, we do indeed.
Appraisal?
We do indeed. And that has evolutionary purposes too, because our brain is trying to discover whether this person is a friend or foe. Are they a threat? Or are they not a threat? And this is all happening below the level of thought and consciousness, deep in the emotional centers of the brain. There's a little almond-shaped organ in there called the amygdala, and it processes this information in a millisecond, and it's not available to the thinking parts of the brain immediately. So we have these initial reactions. We could look at the opposite side of the coin, because sometimes it's indifference that we reveal the truth. People with autism, for example, are very poor reading faces. There's been some very interesting experiments done looking at eye movements. With computer technology today in a laboratory, you can trace someone's eye movements as they look at any particular object. So you take a group of non-autistic individuals and people with autism, and you ask them to look at animate pictures now of animate and inanimate objects, and then monitor what brain centers become most activated. For people with autism, there's more brain activation when they're looking at inanimate objects than at the human face. Whereas for the rest of us, the brain activation is more on the human face than on the inanimate objects.
And in terms of the human face, are the eyes the most important?
Yeah, this is another interesting bit in terms of research with people with autism, for example. Where in the face are they looking as opposed to the likes of you and me? For you and me, and we can trace these eye movements, it's from the nose and above. That's where most of our eye movement gaze is when we look at another human face. For people with autism, it's mostly the nose and below. And therefore, they're not able to read people's emotional state very accurately. We call that mind reading, actually, the ability to understand where another person is at emotionally.